The theme of the lecture today is prisoner no longer. It is very interesting, at least to me, how this theme was derived. Last week, Kamala Mullen Mahashaya asked me to write about the deities in the temple in St. Petersburg for their website that they're making for the center in St. Petersburg. So this simple task turned into 1 week of intense writing, at least 5 hours a day. And the interesting thing about that is that, well, I only managed to write less than 6 pages. I think it's 6 pages when the type is very big. It's not very long. Okay, maybe 5 pages, maybe 6 pages on my computer screen, but to do that really opened up a lot of interesting avenues that I'd like to just share with you, if you don't mind. You know, when I speak, just in normal speech between myself and anybody else, and we just kind of discuss things, one can very easily adapt oneself to the other person. And when you present things in a lecture or you teach a course, the audience is a very, very important factor. I mean, the audience drives the presentation. Many times in St. Petersburg when we have had our discussions, I have congratulated the audience at the end by saying that it is you who have created the presentation, and I thank you for it because I could not have done it on my own. And I even see that, or feel that rather, here in these Saturday broadcasts. It's the same. The audience, the listeners, create as co-creators, equally important, the presentation. Now, any musician or artist can confirm that this is definitely one of the most important factors in their presentations, in their shows. A good audience will bring out the best in the artist. A bad audience will cause the artist to just collapse. And I know this very well from my own live musical experiences, that the interaction between the presenter and the one who receives the presentation is essential in all respects. I think of it being like a mine where you can take out jewels or metals or whatever you take from the earth. It's like a mine. The more you dig it, the more you mine it, the more it can give you. Because if you think about it, I don't walk around all day thinking about these things. They're just part of me. But when you take them, I feel very happy to dig into it deeper and give more. In fact, it's very inspiring. In fact, there's no other reason to do it than this. It's not like we're in school where you're paying me to give a presentation. So in this situation, we become a unit. We become a one where hearer and speaker become intimately united. Or at least that's the way it should be when it's optimally taking place. So we do have experience of this usness in terms of an audience and a band or a speaker and the hearer. We have experience of this usness. We become a new entity, something which is greater than either of the elements, something which is powerful on its own as its own unique personality and unique energetic force. And if you think about it, it is this usness which is created at such occasions, which gives us the greatest pleasure, which gives us the greatest bliss, which gives us the greatest excitement. When we are experiencing something more than just what we are normally, when we experience this new creation of identity by coming in contact with others. You have to focus your camera, Kamala Mala, because it's totally out of focus. So this usness, this coming together, this new personality, which gives great life, which gives great experience, is something very tasty, something very nourishing. So now, usually this is the case in things that we do. And when we do that kind of usness together, the actual, shall we say, pristine integrity of the presenter is no longer of the topmost importance. In other words, the presenter is not so concerned with establishing his or her own way of seeing and dealing with things above all other, factors involved in the communication. But when I was given this assignment, I get assignments too. I suppose it's like homework in school. I was given this assignment, write about the deities in St. Petersburg so we can put it on the website. So I said, okay. I thought, well, this shouldn't take too long, maybe a couple of hours maximally. But here it is 1 week later. I still haven't finished. Except for one day, I have been working on this paper for maybe 5 hours a day. It's made me think in ways I don't usually think. And more importantly, I would say, it made me realize something about the difference between making an usness, which can include compromise, and presenting something which is so deeply essential to my being. And I really hope that nobody's upset by me getting into this very personal sharing with you this morning, but I really feel like doing it. And if it's really terrible and you're bored to death, just send me an instant message saying, hey, shut up. Now when we create this usness, when we get together as presenter and hearer, it's not that this compromise is a bad thing. This compromise is actually a very nourishing experience. In fact, not only is it a nourishing thing, but actually it's something that is part of my essence. I like to connect with people. I like to connect with people. I like to experience that usness that we create when we are communicating our energies together as hearer and speaker, where the distinction overlaps often. And so that is a very good thing. However, it is not necessarily a pristine. You know the meaning of that, Masha? It's not necessarily a pristine presentation. In other words, you're not getting 100% purely me without any concern for you. And that's also good. I mean, why does it have to be a pristine presentation of me? That is so insensitive. It is so basically egocentric. It's irrelevant. After all, you're there. You are as important as I am in this discussion. Even if I happen to be the one who's speaking, it doesn't make you less important. Every time a new person enters into this exchange, it has an effect. The exchange slightly transforms according to the energies which are within the exchange. But when I was taking my week, I'm still taking it, I'm not done with that paper yet, to write this paper, I had all of a sudden I was realizing, why can't I finish this thing? I mean, it should be easy, after all, to tell about the deities. It's a simple thing. I mean, we all know about the deities. What is the problem? And then yesterday, it hit me what was the problem. And in fact, it wasn't a problem. It was the solution. So I guess I'm being impelled by my own excitement or enthusiasm to just share that with you. It's a little bit more complicated than you might imagine. When I was writing about the deities, I realized that, well, first of all, I have to present something about the Supreme. I mean, after all, if I'm going to talk about Radha and Krishna and Gaura Nithai and their forms in the temple, I have to somehow get to the point of the Supreme, of God. How do I deal with that for these people? It's real easy to say Radha and Krishna are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're the controllers of all everything, blah, blah. Gaura Nithai, Lord Chaitanya is the combination of Radha and Krishna. And Lord Shiva and family, these are all demigods who simply administrate in the material world. Simple, easy, takes less than 20 seconds to do it. Okay, that is true. You could say it easily. This is true. There's nothing wrong with it. Why would it be a problem? Okay, I agree with that. But the problem is that it's not a sufficient explanation. It's incomplete. And it misleads us as to not only what is going on in existence, but how to relate with it. So all of a sudden I was faced with the task, how do I present God or the Supreme and anyone else that I'm going to present on this altar here? What am I going to say? It became very troublesome. So I put aside all my fears and all my anxieties about doing it right, and I just ripped off about 5-6 pages of text, just ripped it right off. Took maybe 4 hours, but just ripped it right off. And at the end I thought, see, that wasn't so hard. Then I went back up to edit it, you know, to make it nice English. And then I realized, no, that's not good. No, that doesn't really explain it. No, that's not really correct. And then I started to realize that it was incredibly important to me that every single word was perfect in this particular description. It wasn't speech like this where, you know, if I make a mistake, I can go, oh, wait, don't, it's not like that. Or you will forgive me because you understand this is spontaneous discussion. Here I am representing the deities in our temple to the world. The weight of it was really heavy. And even more momentous was how to do it in such a way that people would find their way to connect with them. For example, if I was to say, okay, there they are. They're great, and all you out here in the audience, you're not so great, and you know, you just have to worship them and stuff. I would be cheating the audience. I would be somehow or another misrepresenting everything. I started understanding that actually this issue very much rests on the core of my entire understanding of existence. And for really one of the first few times that I am consciously delineating specifically the exact point of my philosophical, my experiential, my conscious awareness of existence in written form. In other words, no more hiding. This is what it is. So then I started looking at the text very differently. And I realized, throw this kind of vague phrase out, throw this kind of compromising phrase out, throw this kind of conciliatory understanding out. Say it exactly as you feel it, as you know it to be true. Now, for those of you who've been around with these lectures for quite some time, you remember when I promised that I would only speak with you from my experience, from my realization. And in those few occasions, or whatever occasions, where I would be quoting another or I would be saying something which I have no direct experience of, I would say it, that this is the way it is, but I have heard or I could believe such a thing. Because I deeply feel within that to do it in any other way would be more or less an exploitation of your trust or more or less a misrepresentation of anything I would be speaking about. I mean, after all, if you want to hear about it says in this book or it says in that book, there are plenty of people ready to tell you that in all different organizations all over the world. But I haven't found that this has been very valuable for me. So I'm sharing me according to my actual feeling, which is to speak specifically from my realization and my experience. So I started doing that while writing about the deities, and I had an amazing understanding. And it goes right to the bottom, right to the core of my very motivation as a person, my very motivation for everything I do. I think maybe I was thinking about this all the time because some person questioned my motivations. And, you know, there's nothing that annoys me more than when somebody questions my motivations. I discussed this in one of the blogs I wrote in harrymedia.net, that this person was challenging that I do what I do just to be admired and adored. And that annoyed me enormously, but I wasn't really sure how that annoyed me enormously. I tried to address it in the writing, but then when I understood it in terms of this paper, it became very clear. What became clear was that my actual motivation is to be true totally to myself. True totally to myself right now, right here. And that my understanding, my consciousness, is a creation of all the evolution that has taken place in my life up to this very moment. This idea of devolution or going backwards or losing or forgetting, this is all just nonsense. Every experience is building on another experience, which is bringing one closer and closer to that clarity of the self. Now, if you were watching on Winamp or whatever, you could see the title, Prisoner No Longer. And you may be wondering, well, how does this relate to that title? Well, actually, it is so intimately connected in a most interesting manner. When I was trying to present the deities, I had to start with the complete whole. I could not start anywhere else. It was urgent for me. It was essential for me. I could not do anything else but speak from the platform of the complete whole and then give a description of all the deities within that complete whole. You know, that Isopanishad verse, Om Purnamada Purnamidam, this Purnam, this complete whole, it is such a fascinating and intriguing and essential understanding. Therefore, it was impossible to give the easy explanation. There's God on the altar, there's you on the floor, you offer obeisances, you offer things, you surrender to the God on the altar. It doesn't work because it has nothing to do with the experiences we have in St. Petersburg, or I have here daily with my own deities, or the way it works in the universe. This constant separation, this constant creation of separation between us and the Supreme, or other beings in other dimensions, or lower beings, or matter, or spirit, this constant separation, this pulling apart of the connections, is intolerable to me. For me, I want it to be together. I want it to be cohesive. I want it to be like a family of existence. I deeply want togetherness. If at any point the complete is incomplete, it bothers me. Okay, you can say philosophically that's an incorrect thing to say because the complete is always complete. It can never be incomplete. Yeah, sure, you can say that. And that may work for one who can live with this separation, who can live with separated energies. If you can do that, then you have no problem with that concept. Well, I can't live with that concept. I like it to be together. And together is more than just to simply exist within all cosmic space or all existence everywhere. That's not being together. Just because all the elements cannot be lost, just because all the ingredients of existence can never be lost, does not make it complete. There is more to it than just presence or locality or being possessed by the Supreme, for instance. I'll give you an example that makes it less cosmic and more earthly. Let's say a family of people is sitting in the same room. Now, in one sense, it's a father, it's a mother, it's a daughter, it's a son. They may be a unit. They are a family. And in that sense, they are complete. They may fulfill all the qualifications of being a family. Their neighbors may think they are a family. The government thinks they are a family. And they may be defined as a complete unit. But let's say the wife and the husband are experiencing a long-term friction. They feel that they are pulling apart, away from each other. The children feel themselves disconnected from the parents, and they, even the brother and sister, do not relate well to each other. So is this now, in a little bit expanded definition, a complete unit? Hardly. Even though they may have all their elements completely there, their house, their community, their greater family, the whole planet, the universe, everything may be there. If you see it from another point of view, energetically, it is not complete. These emotional, these energetic, indeed, these spiritual separations tear at the fabric of completeness in the complete whole. But the Supreme is the complete balance, which always tries to bring together that complete whole as a complete unit again. From this point of view, you end up with an amazing understanding or an amazing realization that we, us, these insignificant, usually considered, living beings, have the capacity to tear at the fabric of the complete whole. Even if it's a small tear, it's a significant thing to those who have such sensitivity and awareness that they can feel the energy of the existence. Now, everybody has their field within which their consciousness can enter, and they're aware of the situation within that field. And in this whole, complete whole of everything everywhere, the Supreme is the person, are the personalities who have their consciousness like that, so sensitive that they feel each perturbation within, or disturbance within, that complete whole, that tearing away. So then we can understand the Supreme differently. And when we describe the Supreme from the platform of the complete whole, down to us, down to what we are, we can have a fantastic realization. We can have a totally different way of looking at them. We can see them in a very personal way, in a very encompassing way, in a very loving way. Their whole way in which they appear to us and reciprocate with us transforms. The oneness between ourselves and the Supreme becomes more important because of the connection that is only possible through the oneness, the harmonic connections, the harmonization of our frequencies between ourselves and the Supreme within the complete whole as a oneness, not separate, where the interests of the lover and the beloved become one, where they join together in a unit of love as an usness, as that new personality where their love binds and melds into a pure, complete whole of its own. When you're always concentrating on this difference business, making that usness becomes extraordinarily difficult. I tried this for many years. It's not very easy to live with. Last week I had a conversation with one lady. She was saying it's 10, 15 years since she left ISKCON. All she can think of is how bad she is, how fallen she is, how unintelligent she is, how unimportant she is. This is a very, very, very dangerous mentality. It's caused great pain in this poor lady for so many years. And how many feel like that, feel to be separated, feel to be pulled away, even from themselves, by this insistence on differentiation? And if, as it has been stated, Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is oneness and difference, if it is so, then we have just as much right to grab on to that oneness and hold on to that oneness as anyone else might have had to hold on to the difference. By holding on to the difference, you tear at completeness. By embracing the oneness, you nurture completeness. It is so essential to connect, to create that perfect union of love with the divine energies. By seeing how you and the divine are of the same energy, and to harmonize your frequencies together, to come in intense contact together. This is what both want more than anything else. Don't you have a better word for divine? I mean, Boga, doesn't that mean God? Anyway, because I'm very carefully... You see, this has been the problem in my paper, right? You speak about God, and then you've got this entity who's way beyond everybody else. And as soon as you're stuck with this God concept, immediately separation is inherent within that concept. You must have that separation. Otherwise, there's no meaning to God and man as categories. So, I have been very clearly sticking to an understanding of the supreme, of the supreme divine, of the supreme divine energy, for it is the most essential of all completeness creating understandings. You know, it is not very easy to deal with, shall we say, the Supreme, because we have a deep fear within us that we're not good enough, we're not intelligent enough, we're not capable enough, we're too sinful or fallen. It's this fear which keeps us from the Divine, from the Supreme, from the connection. In this, when you feel this separation, it is, in one sense, comforting, because you can feel very happy in your own inferiority, in one sense, and not be challenged in connection with the Supreme. You can feel comfortable because you're not expected to do more. You're not challenged with having to make the connection. You don't have to worry about being more than what you think you can be. So you can feel comfortable just following some process or surrendering to somebody else or just accepting everything you hear, because it fits within your worldview of comfort zoning at the fearful level of, I'm just small and insignificant, what do I know? Now, actually, as comfortable as we might feel in such a situation, it is not only damaging to ourselves in the long run, but it is extremely dissatisfying to the Supreme. I'm not talking theoretically here. I'm not talking about what should be written down somewhere, or I'm talking about my direct experience, where this togetherness, this oneness, this completeness is so much more satisfying. Now, many people have such feelings in their heart of inferiority, of fear, that they basically cannot expand their lives. They cannot evolve. They cannot go to those places they wish to go to. Their connections with others are blocked. Their awareness of themselves are blocked, is blocked. So they become prisoners, actual jailed prisoners who have placed themselves in jail because they're not good enough to go out of jail, because they're too sinful to leave jail, because they're too fallen. They'll just create havoc for themselves and others. So they sit in jail and just accept this position of responsibility. Now, this is all a mental conception. This is all a mental concoction. But the problem is that we become so convinced by what we think that we accept it within our heart. Through many lifetimes, we have been accepting this kind of repressed understanding. And therefore, when we meet it again, we embrace it and accept it. It just feels right because it's familiar. But after a while, we start to see the effects of it as it eats away at us within the heart. And as we do feel separate from others, we do feel a loneliness, we do feel a disconnection on very deep levels. Yet, when we actually understand the completeness, the oneness we potentially can create with the Supreme, and the delightful experience it is from both sides, why would we ever want to remain a prisoner? When you actually feel this connection, this any attempt to keep you in that prison would be immediately disregarded, immediately smashed away, because you could not tolerate it for a second. You've got this connection. You want to keep this connection. You want to experience this connection. Because to be a prisoner is to lose your freedom. To lose your freedom is to lose all your capacities to grow, to love, to connect, to relate, to even be of service to anyone. And therefore, when you come right down to it, to this baseline experience, my baseline experience, my evolution of consciousness that is coming up to the present moment, insists on the complete whole remaining complete and the incomplete coming to again connect to the complete. I feel like getting chains and wrapping them around these jail cell walls and pulling them with bulldozers and pulling down all the prison chains and pulling down all the prison bars and walls and letting all the prisoners run free, screaming, "Yes, freedom!" Now, I know if you just listen, you think, "Oh, well, this sounds very nice, big words." But actually, these words boil down to two very fundamental ways of looking at the same thing. It is either you see yourself as different and separated, or you see yourself as one and connected. It is the basic fundamental delineation which separates all persons today. And this delineation cuts across all economic groups, all social groups, all spiritual groups, all cultural nationalities. It is something which is of the soul. It is something so unique of the soul that when I walk or I talk or I connect with anybody, I see immediately, oh, they're a difference seer. Oh, they're a oneness seer. Now, obviously, everybody who sees the difference also sees some oneness. Everybody who sees the oneness also sees some difference. There's no mutual exclusivity. But I'm talking about that fundamental, strongest belief system which guides and rules the choices you make. When one makes choices, one develops his whole course of future evolution and development. So this principle upon which we make choices, which guides our choice making, is the essence of our life. And the amazing thing is that I can't convince you to do that. I can't convince you to feel in another way. That doesn't work. So rather what I'm doing, it's not like I consciously did this, but I've realized, just all from writing this paper, I know it sounds weird, what I've realized what I'm doing is I'm just opening the door to those who have that real deep down understanding, or who when they hear it, embrace it. And this understanding has made me very peaceful in regards to who is here and who is not here. Because those who are here are those who understand, like, appreciate, and resonate well with this understanding. Because there's always a balance within the whole universe. It may not be that there's a very comfortable completeness, because some wish to be separated, but there is a balance. Everybody has their place to be so long as they need to be there. In other words, so long as you need to be in whatever place you need to be, you will be there. And when that place no longer serves your purposes, just have the courage to take a step out of that place. And even if it seems the whole world doesn't like what you just did, if it's what you feel, if it's what you are, get out of the prison of previous conceptions. Even though part of me wants to rip out the walls of the jail, another part of me knows perfectly well that the key to the jail is hanging right on the door itself. All you have to do is reach around, get the key, open the door, and get out. But as long as it serves your purposes, correctly or incorrectly understood, but as long as it serves your purposes, or you think it does, you keep the key there and you refuse to see that it's right there. So, from that point of view, I suppose I'm talking something which everybody already understands, so I just shouldn't even bother saying it. But like I said in the beginning of this discussion, I'm just kind of sharing with you how I feel today, because writing that paper has been such a illuminating experience to just philosophically really express very, very precisely how I feel about life as the product of my experiences up to this very moment. Anyway, So if you want to read that paper, I'm going to, of course, send it when I finish it, God knows when, I hope tomorrow. But I've been saying that for 5 days now. But I'll send it to Masha and Kamala Mala so they can put it on their website. But I'm also going to put it in the HariMedia.net forum under my blog. If you want to read it, you can. I mean, it's for another purpose, but you'll see, if you read it carefully in English, you'll see my struggle. I really wish that we had, like, I could project hologram deities to everybody who is connected to this broadcast, so we could do these tuning meditations to the deities that we do in St. Petersburg. And I'll bet you it might be true that the deities would accept these hologram forms, and you would be able to tune to them even though it is produced by an electronic medium. After all, what's the difference? Electronic medium or wood, what's the difference? What a wonderful project to work on as scientists. Projecting holographic images to others connected on the net. What an amazing activity that would be. That's the thing I miss the most about not being in the temple in St. Petersburg, is that we have these just absolutely wonderful tuning meditations to the deities, where all the fears, all of the doubts about what we are and what we could be or should be or must be or were, just get dissipated, and we just simply connect to Sri Sri Gaur-Nitai. It is, at least for me, I don't know, to do that together with a room full of people is just probably one of the nicest things I get to do in my life. I have a question from Argentina, which I think I will take. Nandu's asking, why do we Why do we put ourselves in jail? Why do we blind our eyes? Why do we accept a position that imprisons us? Sure, we can talk about this, and sure, I can give you an answer. I can give you an answer from my own experience. But the solution is more important than the answer. And the solution, which I'll start with, and then we'll go back to the answer. The solution is when you come in contact with your real self, your real energy, your real essence, your love, and when you feel the heart, not the mind, but the heart, that's when all of these mental created prisons can be just broken away. Now, why do we accept this monstrous mind, which is so unnatural for us? That is a question which requires a bit of analysis. Many of the people who accept such understandings do so out of fear because they were not able to deal with certain situations in their lives. I cannot say with certainty that all persons are like this, but I can say that in my experience, almost all of those who I have met, if not all of them, have developed this understanding because of some enormous pain in their heart they cannot deal with. In other words, a trauma to the heart causes us to push away feeling, to deny feeling, to deny connection to that part of us which experienced enormous pain. And then that experience has caused us to just leave the heart completely and bring our consciousness to the level of the mind, because there we are safe from feeling with our consciousness the pain in the heart. Some do it because they lose a relative. Some do it because they lose a girlfriend or a wife, or some do it because of they've made a huge mistake in their lives. I mean, there are as many reasons as there are people. Concepts do not embrace you. You embrace concepts. Beliefs do not accept you. Beliefs are accepted by you. When you feel a need to accept something, you do it. An external force can put your body under its control, but no force can put your mind under its control. You cannot be hypnotized unless you want to. You cannot be brainwashed unless you want to. You cannot be convinced unless you want to. So, in trying to find a solution to why we have placed ourselves in jail, we have to go back to those points in time where our heart was so severely attacked by trauma that we escaped from feeling. And what better way to escape from feeling than to embrace an enormously complex philosophical understanding where you can just lose your mind in philosophy day and night and night and day. And in this enormous philosophical understanding, you can start battling with others about being right, and they are wrong, and this is better, and this is worse, and this is the way it must be, and that's the way it must not be. But children don't work like that. Women don't work like that. And therefore, families don't work like that. And therefore, there's a collapse on a very deep, fundamental level within any such group. The solution is to come back to the heart and to have that as the center of your existence. It does not mean you become unintelligent and lovey-dovey, but it does mean that that is the center from which you perceive existence, from which you make your choices about your future. For it is the nature of the heart to love, and the nature of love is to be encompassing, to bring together, to experience connection. And the nature of the mind is to see separations, to see differences, to analyze and categorize and make distinctions and thus separate. I made the mistake of trying to connect with those who were on the platform of the mind, and I got burned. So I just leave the door open. If you feel that living on that mental plane is no longer fitting your needs, is no longer fulfilling something in you that you wish, then just let it go and fearlessly embrace yourself, your heart. Fearlessly allow yourself to love and fearlessly connect with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because that is His energy, that energy of fearless, pure heart, unconditional love. Can you imagine? That's all Lord Chaitanya is, pure, unconditional love, yet that includes everything. And when He meets someone on the mind, what does He do? Take Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He talks with Sarvabhauma. He convinces Sarvabhauma. And He totally transforms Sarvabhauma from a man of the mind to a man of the heart. So much so that when Lord Chaitanya once came to Him early in the morning with some maha, and Sarvabhauma did not take his bath, he did not do his morning prayers, something very important for somebody on that platform. He just got up, ate the prasadam and chanted Hari. See the heart, see the change, totally different. This is Lord Chaitanya. He can deal on all platforms. He can deal with anyone, anywhere. Yet He always brings them to the heart. An essential part of His mission is to bring the philosophers from the mind to the heart. Impersonalism lives in the mind. You don't feel impersonalism. You don't even experience it. It's born of a detached mind, a philosophical construct. Yet you do feel oneness, for this oneness is not impersonal. This oneness born of the heart of love is the supreme personalism. Yes, it is so. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so great. His energy right now is so relevant. He wants His energy to flow through the hearts of those who connect with Him in love. To have that love flow through you, not as words, but as that emotion, spiritual energy which just emanates from you and accommodates others within the completeness of the Supreme. And those who chant in that way, or those who do kirtan in that way, just bring all together in an encompassing whole. And expressions of love are always beautiful. It is the nature of those expressions of love to be beautiful. They are sweet. They are deep. They are charming. They are nourishing, compassionate. They are everything we want, we thirst for in life. And that's why being of the heart is the exact representation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's energy, which will just allow Him to just flow through us, with us, in that usness which will transform the cold and hard world we live in. Not because we've got to save the world. That whole concept is silly, foolish, impossible. It's impractical, and it's just simply egocentric. But when one thinks about the fact that it's impossible to live with this separation, and one simply wishes out of their own nature to bring together in love people, it's a whole other way of understanding what we do when we reach out to others. If you speak with others or you relate with others with the idea, you're going to save them. You're going to help them. You're going to change them. They feel that as an aggression and they back off because that's born of this distinction, born of the separation. There's you who know better than them. You are spiritual. They are in Maya. You are going to impress upon them how to become like you. All religions all over the world have been doing this since their conception. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never did this. Yet his followers do it. Why? If you really want to make a change, you do it because you are changed. Because you are simply sharing of yourself with others, simply sharing your love with others, and encompassing them within that love. All in the atmosphere of complete freedom, and all in the atmosphere of equality, that we are one. There is only one of us. That love I send to you is that love which I live within. That negativity I send to you is that negativity which returns to me. Anything born of difference and separation feeds, nurtures, and continues that difference and separation. Even if the words are different, even if the words speak connection, but when the whole fundament speaks separation and difference, this is what actually takes place. I have a question here which came from Moscow, which I think is actually relevant to what we just did. Tangentially, but it's definitely relevant. The question is, sometimes I experience very unpleasant feelings when I feel the energies of another person. And during such occasions, would rather close myself off from their energies. And therefore, it becomes troublesome to experience oneness at such times. Well, that is true, and that is not a problem. It is not not something which is a detriment to what you wish to do. But rather, it is a practical fact that we still live within this present environment. Again, I said before, if you might remember, it doesn't mean that we're in this lovey-dovey, all is one, anything is everything kind of idea. But rather, we are giving our energy of love out as our basic emanation, our basic energetic transmission. And what we choose to accept is according to what we are. So those who are love and give love to others as their basic transmitted frequency are not eager and do not wish to accept negativity in return, because that negativity does not fit within their harmonic frequency fields. So they do keep away those energies which have the motivation to cause trouble or to cause disturbance within our own, but not by creating a hard shell around us. There are two problems with this hard shell. The first problem could be that the person who is shooting the negative energy in may be stronger, have stronger energy than my shell is able to repel. And the second problem is that when negative energies like that bounce off of our shell, they return to the one who sent them multiplied. In other words, the negativity goes back to the source multiplied, which increases the negativity, which ultimately could be a impetus for that negative energy to continue to cause us difficulty, but with more power. Therefore, there are certain techniques, there are certain methodologies which avoid that yet protect us quite nicely. For example, you can create around you a very powerful violet flame that just burns up all that negative energy coming to you right at its source, just burns it right away, all the way to the root of this energy. Or you can create soft shields that simply absorb all this negativity and prevent it from coming to you, and then later on you can just burn it up with these violet flames. Or you just place such a field of love around you that that negativity is not accepted by you in any way and therefore cannot affect you. Don't forget that if somebody comes up to you and screams in your face holding their fist like this, you eat gorilla toenails for breakfast. You're just a complete animal. Now, of course, you don't eat gorilla toenails for breakfast. So it doesn't affect you. It's just like madness. It makes you smile. Somebody was giving me a hard time and was complaining about my poodle. My poodle, called Suchi a poodle. So we were running around, we were walking around and we were a poodle, a dog, a kind of a dog, a poodle, P-O-O-D-L-E. It's a kind of a dog. Anyway, we were just telling Suchi, oh, you poodle, you little poodle. Aren't you insulted? Oh, my goodness. And he would just jump up and down and laugh. Oh, I'm a poodle. So it becomes amusing. It becomes, actually, in its ultimate sense, such foolishness becomes even charming in its own insane way. Don't forget that the pain that others throw at you only affects you as much as you accept it. If you know you're a good person, you know you're doing the best possible thing you can do right now, you know that your heart, your motive is of love, then these things just, you do not take them seriously, and you do not condemn those who send such energies your way. It's another way of dealing with the negative parts of life. So you can see that your not reciprocating with the negativity of another is your attempt, your honest, sincere attempt to not amplify their difficulties. And you wait patiently for that time when they themselves, of their own, when their own evolutionary time has ripened, they will themselves understand the real reason they project negativity to you. Mainly, they are expressing it of themselves. Now, that doesn't mean that sometimes we never do stupid things that are wrong and should be corrected. I'm not speaking about that. I'm talking about just simply that negative energy meant to harm us, not to correct something that's actually essentially wrong. I remember I was once explaining my in a little bit of a way, the idea of the soul and this energy of love. And then some devotee told me, oh, you don't know the philosophy. And I just let that fly off because, first of all, I know it's not true. Second of all, I don't accept the philosophy, whatever that may be, according to them. And third, why should I feel conflict with a person who's just expressing what they really feel themselves? My feeling is, you really believe what you believe in. That's fine with me. I mean, after all, it's your life. And you really feel it's your responsibility to somehow correct me. All right, I'll accept the love in which that mood was accepted, your mood, and not create conflict in any way, because what would be the point ultimately? And besides, if it wasn't for these very interesting little interludes, what would I talk about? I have to have some, I suppose, material to discuss. So bring it on. It's fine. It helps. It gives facility. That's a joke anyway. But I really love the one about the poodle. That's my all-time favorite. I guess that gives you a little insight into the weirdness of my mind. I hope that answered your question anyway. Over there in Moscow. Want to give a wave if it did? Okay. I don't know if anybody wants to talk about anything else. Okay. About it, I really have a hard time with this appearance day of Lord Nrisimhadev. I mean, if you think about it, where did this take place anyway? And how does somebody come out with saying, this is the day? I mean, sorry, it just doesn't work for me. I think it's like Christmas, you know? Some people just said, okay, we're going to put Christmas on that day. And, you know, of course, the Orthodox, the Greek Orthodox Church or Russian Orthodox Church said, nah, we're not going to do it on that day. We're going to do it on that day. And the real day was probably someday in March anyway, or February, I don't know. I mean, like, to come up with a day. So, okay, there's a day. I'm into it. I love it. It's a great day. We'll sing Lord Nrisimhadev's mantras, and we'll think about Lord Nrisimhadev, and we'll eat a feast for Lord Nrisimhadev. I'm into it. We can do that every day, as far as I'm concerned. But almost everybody accepts, without question, this is the day. Why? Because it always has been the day. There has been an unbroken succession of these days through the unlimitedly millions of years back, whenever Lord Nrisimhadev appeared, wherever it was, which nobody's sure of. To which I answer, yes, dear, yes, dear. Anyway, bon appetit, have a nice chant. I have heard a rumor that some nice feast from Buenos Aires is on the airplane right now. I said, I heard a rumor that some nice feast from Buenos Aires is on the airplane right now coming here, so it'll arrive in time. Anyway, that's just a side thing. What was the question, by the way? Oh, I guess I did. But do you want to hear something about Lord Nrisimhadev himself, or you want to hear about his day? Because you asked about the day, so I talked about the day rather than... You know, when I was writing my paper, I put Lord Nrisimhadev in the paper. And, you know, it was very short, yet it was so nicely formulated the first time I wrote it that after 1 week I have still not touched that part of the paper, which is amazing to me. I have rewritten every other thing at least 50 times, but this part I've never changed. Unfortunately, it's on my Mac, which is now doing 10,000 different things for this broadcast, and I would be afraid to pull up the document at this moment in time. Let's see. If I remember correctly, I just explained that Lord Nrisimhadev acts, I mean, at least to me, as the support who creates a fearless situation and acts as the support, the fundamental support of my personal spiritual development so that I can fearlessly continue to do what I think is right despite pressure from anywhere. A constant friend, a constant supporting fundamental power that just gives strength to make it all work in life. And that, I think, is just fine. A just fine description. I mean, of course, I probably did it better in the paper. You can read it when I'll put it up in the forums, in the blog. It'll be in the blogs, but so you can read it. I just don't know how our particular PHBB forum program handles 5 pages, but we'll see. I've got a question here from Buenos Aires. I said a person doesn't devolve or unevolve. Actually, unevolve, that's an impossibility. To unevolve would mean you'd have to take your evolution and unwind it backwards. You'd have to undo the past, right? You'd have to undo everything that took place by unevolving. I use the word devolve, which refers to, I think, I mean, I could be wrong, going backwards in your evolution. In other words, becoming something less or becoming something degraded, which is, I suppose, the way in which it's used. But he was asking in the question, what if a person really wants to devolve, really wants to pull themselves into what they consider to be lower energies, lower realms of existence, and so on? Now, this is a very interesting question because it directly addresses a concept which everybody just accepts as true, even when it's not. In this question, or in this concept, we are actually making two different concepts and calling them the same when they are not so. In this concept, we take, in one of these conceptions that we have, we say, there is a certain standard. There are certain ways of action, certain ways of thinking, certain ways of being which are higher than others. And because we have declared that these activities are higher than these activities, if a person who did these activities now does these activities, they are going backwards. Now, from the point of view of that definition, it is correct. From the point of view of that definition, if you define evolution as being the way you act, sure, that's right. However, there is another way of defining evolution, which I personally think is much more relevant to reality. It is something which is a long-term process by which our consciousness is constantly building on all the experiences we have had in the past. All of them, not just moment-by-moment analysis of what we are. For example, in this previous conception, in the first conception we discussed, it's basically a you are what you eat conception. You are exactly what you are experiencing right now and nothing else. This is, of course, if you were to consider the experience of the present moment, this is a very good way to say it. But when you're talking about evolution, this is a very incomplete, a very limited way of understanding it. Sure, my present actions, my present consciousness is a product of all that has taken place before, but that is a description of exactly how I am living moment by moment, not a description of my evolution. My evolution is a process that is a product of the sum of the present moment on the entirety of my past at that very end of it. So it's a continuous building. It's a continuous progressive building. That's why we call it evolution. It's an evolving from one thing to another, evolving. Now, if you think about the scientific definition of the word evolution, it means that every new step taken in evolution has to serve some function, has to have some purpose. Otherwise, it will just simply die away. But we don't die away. We continue. So that means our evolutionary stages are serving us a function. So there are times, there are occasions when that kind of standard, so-called standard imposed upon us, may not be the best thing for us at a certain point in time. It may not nurture our long-term evolutionary advancement towards the highest possible goals, towards the highest possible state we can be, to maintain such kinds of actions. There are occasions in some persons, according to the way they are, where just being bad sometimes can really help them evolve. Now, of course, I don't know who's listening to this broadcast, so I have to qualify that by saying I'm not telling you to be bad. But what I am saying is that there are occasions during our evolutionary process, when following the norm, doing what's expected, following standards, is blocking our development because we're stuck in something that is not serving our purposes anymore. It's not helping. And just breaking free from bondage of expectations sometimes can allow us to walk down a path which is so much more expansive and so much more beneficial for us. Or as Krishna once said, what does repression accomplish? What you resist persists. If you think that, my God, I'll fall if I do what I really want to do, and it continually coming back to you as desire after desire after desire to do it, do you really think you're evolving? You may be a good boy, but that doesn't mean you're evolving. So, I suppose what, in the real definition of evolution, we're talking about doing whatever is required to keep ourselves progressive, always growing, progressing, evolving towards the best possible person or being we could ever be, step by step, evolving that way. Did that help? Maybe, maybe not, he says. Maybe, maybe not. So you have to tippy-tap me a little bit of a message telling me what is the maybe, maybe not. You know, we can guarantee you're going to get an answer. That doesn't mean you're going to get a good one. Or you're going to like the answer. Okay, he's writing to me. He's saying that, let's say I've done a lot of evolution in my life. You just tell me if I've got it right. I've done a lot of evolutionary practices in my life, and, you know, I can't handle it anymore. I'm just going to be ignorant, because ignorance is bliss. And this way, I'm going to, you know, drink a lot of beer and eat a lot of dead animals. Again, this is not devolution. This is simply taking a break. That in your evolution, you have decided that, wait a minute, hold on, hold everything. I need a break. I've got to come to terms with my life and my situation. I need a break here to understand something. And I'm not going to struggle to understand. I'm just simply going to stop trying, because I just need a break. Now, that is not going backwards. That is a very important part of your evolution. It's giving you a platform from which to move forward when you're ready to do so. After all, what about the people who have denied themselves for years, who have refused to feel for years simply so they could follow a set of rules and regulations? I mean, maybe they are evolving because that is an austerity and that does help. But are they really evolving at a rate which should be satisfactory to them? And yes, that is also part of their evolution. It's what they've chosen to do. It's what they've chosen to accept, because it's what they need, what is serving their interests. And when they make a step more, that will be a very big part of their evolution, because they are accepting themselves again. They are empowering themselves again. They are allowing themselves to feel. And in all cases, it's part of evolution. So just make sure you don't mix these two concepts and call them evolution. One is just simply being a good person in some definition, just following some rules and regulations, whatever they may be, and maintaining a standard, and anything less is a fall down from evolution. That's a totally foreign concept, actually, from evolution. Okay, let's quit now. It's a little early, that's fine. And I'll be here next week to talk to you if you want to hear, if you want to participate, up to you. And if you have any particular things you'd like to talk about, write me an email. And I reply to all of them. And I thank you very much once again for being part of this interesting project, this program which is challenging the status quo. And I wish you all well. I wish you a lot of love in your lives, and I wish you a lot of prosperity. I wish you a lot of peace, yet I don't wish you any boredom. And may your experiences always capture your imagination and inspire you further. Okay. And bye. See you next week, perhaps. Good luck. Good fortune. Thank you.